to the Everyday Journey podcast. We are back after a break, and I'm here with Brett Whiteside, whom I met in Chiang Mai. We're here in Chiang Mai. We're going to be covering Brett's professional and life experiences. He's a language specialist and used to be a teacher, and now runs a fairly successful online business that's related to teaching Thai. And the website is called learnthaifromawhiteguy.com, which explains everything already. Like, you're gonna learn because he's a teacher, he's a guy, he's a white guy. Which I guess implies that you're from the United States, right? When people say, like, white guy, that usually means Canadian, American, or...
I mean, the name started as a joke, because I started to teach Thai, and I think one of my friends started, you know, saying something like that, in basically in relation to, like, Pretty Fly for a White Guy, that song from, like, the 90s. And also my last name is Whiteside, so it was just started as something joke, and I was like, I might as well just make... I put it on a flyer or something before I used that name for the site, and then, I don't know, everyone liked it, so I just...
I mean, apart from the fact that it's quite long for a URL name, I think everything about it is winning.
Yeah.
It explains everything, it rhymes, you can easily remember it.
That's the secret. It's like, I don't have to have cards or anything, because even if they remember most of it, they'll find me. It's pretty memorable.
Definitely. I mean, I didn't have to look it up or anything, and I just like... What happens if I just add .com at the end?
Right.
And it worked. Yeah. So that existed for how long? Like, when did you start?
The site had that name probably by mid-2012, end of 2012. Mm-hmm. That's when I started. I mean, I had a blog before then. It was like a Blogspot or something like that, like learnthai.blogspot or something similar. And I eventually, once I started using that name, and then I started selling a product around 2012, like an ebook back then. Probably towards the last quarter of 2012, maybe.
So let's rewind to where you grew up and what led you to becoming a language sort of expert.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was born and grew up in central New Jersey on the east coast of the U.S. And I grew up in the suburbs. So it was terrible. I mean, I had friends and stuff, but, you know.
No good memories of the suburbs as a child?
Yeah, some. There were some good memories, mostly snow and video games.
Oh, okay. Winter comes to mind before summer.
Yeah, I guess there was a lot of pool action, too.
Uh-huh.
I left the States pretty young. I guess I was, well, not as young as some people these days, but this was like the end of 2002, I left the U.S. for the first time, and I went to London with some friends, and the first day I got there, literally we arrived like little late night, passed out, woke up at like 5 in the morning. Am I too quiet?
No, it's okay.
And I just walked around London for a while by myself, and I knew during this little walk that I was never going to live in the States again.
It was just, it was that
I knew,
thrilling, riveting.
Well, it was like, no, it's like, I didn't realize that I could just leave.
Ah, you were in like a golden birdcage.
I mean.
With an open door.
Pretty much. I didn't know that you could just leave the country and go live somewhere and be fine. And so.
Interesting.
It was, I literally was crossing the street and I was stressing out because I really wanted a Diet Coke. And I couldn't find a 7-Eleven or a gas station or anything to where I could buy. It was open. It was like 5 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And then I was crossing the street and I noticed that it was the other way. And I had this moment like, what's wrong with this place? And then I just had this rush of ideas like, oh, well, I'm an idiot. Like, this is easy and the Coke doesn't matter. The 7-Elevens don't matter. And
it was a very intense moment of adjustment.
Huge epiphany.
It's like a lot of things happened within like moments.
Yeah, like I was complaining in my mind about stuff that didn't matter at all, and then I suddenly realized what was happening, which
was
a rare thing when something like that happens in your life. And I went back to the States after this trip, and I gave away or sold everything I owned, and I left 5 months later, and I went back to the UK for a while.
Mm.
And then Ireland, I traveled around a bit, and then... I was looking for somewhere cheaper to go because I'd spent about a month or so in that part of the world.
You have no family connections to those places, like no relatives to visit or anything like this?
I had a friend in the UK and a couple of friends in Ireland that had worked in New Jersey for a while, so I kind of had a place to crash in London and a little bit of, and sometimes in Ireland, but mostly I stayed in hostels in the beginning.
Generally it happened because you tagged along with your friends, right? It was not like a...
The first trip, yes.
And then the chain reaction
started. I was at a point in my life from high school up until my early 20s where I always wanted to travel, and my family never really traveled anywhere, so it was always like this desire to go.
So you did travel as a kid?
Very little, no.
Uh-huh. I see.
And so literally as soon as I graduated high school, like a day later, I hitchhiked to Florida with some friends. And then as that just kind of became my life, I'd work some job that I hated for 3 or 4 months, save up even like $800, and then I would go anywhere. Anyone that I vaguely knew, even if I didn't really know them or if I didn't particularly like them. If someone said, hey, does anyone want to go to anywhere? I would always be like, let's go.
Mm.
So I went on a lot of trips around the U.S.
I
flew and like met friends on the internet and stuff, people I knew from like online games and girls that I talked to and like AOL chat, like scary stuff back in those days. I would just go fly across the country and go hang out with them for 2 weeks without having ever seen their face.
Adventurous.
It was fun.
And nobody killed me. Nobody killed you. You didn't kill anyone.
I don't think so.
Wow. Cool. The beginning of the internet around that time really like, gave a lot of new ideas about how to connect with people and where to visit.
Right.
Yeah, I remember I was in IRC chat for the first time, and I was in the general chat room, and I would go into private conversations with some people because mm-hmm. You could like go into a private window. And I spoke with this girl from Latvia or something like that,
right.
and it was so amazing that we could in real time discuss like what's outside the window, what's the weather like, you know. And I would get like a live update from that location from the person, and they were interested in giving this to me, and I was interested in sharing back, and we just spoke for like 5 hours, just chatting.
It was awesome at the time. I mean, that was like the best thing ever to be.
Yeah, and then you made it the physical. Reality, like you went out to meet people,
yep.
And live in different countries. So what was after Ireland?
I was thinking about somewhere. I wanted to go somewhere cheaper, and some people had suggested Morocco, Spain, and I guess I was talking to someone at a hostel about it, and someone behind me heard and said, oh, you should go to Thailand. Thailand's like really cheap and really nice, and it's just a really nice place.
In early 2000s, right?
2003.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Thailand? I didn't even know where Thailand was. But I was like, that sounds good. So I bought a ticket to Thailand. I didn't know where it was. And then I flew there. I mean, I think I went back to the States for a few days, and then I flew straight to Thailand. I had got robbed at the hostel.
Where?
In Dublin.
Uh-huh.
Like, while I was sleeping, someone rifled through my stuff and took my passport and my wallet and everything. I went back to the States, basically, kind of to see a girl that I was missing, but also to kind of replace my license and ID and get a new ATM card and that kind of stuff. And I got a temporary passport.
You had to go to an embassy or consulate?
Actually, I had to get the temporary passport I got in Dublin. And then I went back to the UK for a minute, and then I flew back to the US for, like, I think literally 4 days or something.
Did it stress you out? Like, did it dissuade you from...
No, I was already further, you know? I was already on a mission.
Okay.
None of that. I mean, I was annoyed, but...
It's a good experience to have early on.
I was surprised how little the consulate was. They don't help you at all. It was actually pretty surprising. I figured it would be different, but I guess in retrospect it must happen to people staying at hostels all the time, so like they're used to.
Oh, I see. So they were not very sympathetic.
No, they don't care. They don't care. They're like, all right, we'll make you a new passport, we just need like 85 euros and some passport pictures. And I was just like, I don't have any money or cards or anything. So I was like, how do I pay for that? They're like, isn't there someone you can call? I was like, not really. I couldn't ask my family for money. So I ended up asking a friend in Ireland, and they lent me some money.
Okay, you're back to the States. You immediately...
Yeah, just 4 days, and then I went to Thailand. And I was in Bangkok maybe 2 nights, maybe? Or maybe the second night? Like, I got ripped off at the airport, sent to some place in the middle of nowhere, paid like... I mean, I'm not ripped off. I paid like $30 for a room. That was probably worth 15 or something.
So at that time, no internet easily available.
You had to go to internet cafes back then. So yeah, when you land, you don't know anything. You don't have any information.
You're at the mercy of the people who are there to sort of greet you.
Right. And, you know, that's back in the day, they'd have all those people at the airport who would kind of... They're ready for you. They have the logo. Oh, look at this place. It's only $25. Something like that. So I went and stayed at this place for a night. Mm-hmm. And then I made it to Khao San Road the next day. And I met someone who's just like, oh, you should go to Chiang Mai. I was like, Chiang Mai, all right, what's that? And so I got on a bus. I think I got on a bus that night, and I went to Chiang Mai.
So just because someone mentioned it.
I was,
and Bangkok was not for you. You made up your mind.
It was okay. It was a big city. I didn't know what was going on, and I was very open to suggestions, so I would try anything. So someone said, check out Chiang Mai. So I got on a bus that night, and I arrived at Chiang Mai. They got dropped off at the moat at like 6 in the morning. That was it. I just roamed around until I found a guest house, and then that was sort of the beginning of my Chiang Mai life. I believe it was March 2003.
Way before a lot of people knew about Chiang Mai and its scene.
Nobody knew about Chiang Mai.
There was no scene, right?
No. There was, there was like hippie backpacker types and the old complainy foreigners. That was most of the Westerners back then. I mean, a few exceptions, but those are most of the people that I encountered.
Yeah, we're in Chiang Mai right now, and I know Chiang Mai is a hub, sort of a digital nomad place, blah, blah, blah. A lot of things I learned about this lifestyle were from people who spent time here and sort of created a model. I mean, Chiang Mai is an ever-evolving place, but by now I think it's established that this is the population, there's locals, and there's a bunch of us, and everyone is sort of okay with that, it seems like.
I mean, I would say Chiang Mai is probably I haven't been everywhere in the world, but I've been to a lot of places, like at least like 60 countries, and I would say Chiang Mai is the easiest place I've ever been in my life by far. As far as anything you need to do, okay, like the visa can be a little bit of a pain, but you can just come in here.
Well, that's about the country, not about the city specifically.
Right. Thailand's just easy. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you were worried about going to Asia, just go to Thailand first. It's so easy to do everything you want here. The food's really good. The people are really nice. And just getting around and doing anything.
Really
anything is easy.
Yeah, even if you don't think you like this type of culture or whatever, or Asia, blah, blah, there's really nothing to dislike when you get here.
There's no good reason, yeah. It's okay, it's hot. but you get used to it. You walk a little slower, you don't spend as much time in the sun.
Yeah, I think we're both by this time, by now, have made up our minds about the cold, right? Better be in the heat, than in the...
It is, for most of the year.
It's
nice to go do stuff in winter sometimes, but...
But not endure it for months.
But not to suffer through it, like de-icing your car every morning, and I remember doing that back
then. I had a work trip in January from Thailand to New York for 8 days. It was traumatizing for me, because I immediately caught a cold. I noticed the subway system, how inefficient it is, and how horrible during rush hour, when there's only like one or two stalls through which you can pass, only one machine that sells tickets and all this stuff, and it's very congested. I'm thinking, Bangkok is actually a lot more organized. The subway, the metro system there is actually a lot more modern.
They didn't have the SkyTrain when I first got here.
Right.
So like you had to. And obviously there was no anything resembling rideshare, so you had to take taxis or buses. And the buses were so cheap, but it was always
still
really confusing.
Like $7 or something.
But you'd have to take taxis everywhere and deal with getting guys trying to rip you off all the time. I mean, that still exists, obviously, to some extent, but it's maybe not as rampant as it used to be.
So you ended up in Chiang Mai with no plan.
No plan, enough money to probably survive for a year or two. And I don't know, I just found a guest house and I...
What's the budget? What was the budget?
I was spending... So it was 42 baht to the dollar when I got here.
Okay.
But because I was in the UK before, I had a bit of pounds left. And the pound was like 75 to the dollar or something. Like something so...
Mm-hmm.
I was probably spending about 100 bucks a week at most, including accommodation. And I was just living out of like hostels and guest houses and stuff.
A week.
Yeah, and that was because I was drinking a lot.
Yeah,
because it wasn't food. Because back then
things got a little bit more expensive, but not by much.
Oh no, they've gotten a lot more expensive.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Back then, like the red cars, the Songtails, were 10 baht to go anywhere, and let's see.
Compared to up to 200 today.
Well, 30 now is the base, and if you're going to the airport or somewhere far, they'll try to get at least 100. Yeah,
100. Okay, so you went up.
And food, like food court food, was 25 to 30 baht. And like there was like government set prices. Like food courts were not allowed to raise above certain prices.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
Always something that was mandated, because if it got too expensive, if people that don't make a lot of money, would, you know, go crazy and complain. So the government would, like, regulate that. I mean, I imagine they still do, but now it's not like those days. But I used to eat most meals for about a dollar back then. So food was...
Less, really, with this exchange rate, 40 sous.
Right. Yeah. Well, it changed pretty soon. Like, I think by the end of that first year, it wasn't in the 40s anymore. It gradually dropped into the 30s.
Mm-hmm. And then some kind of plan materialized.
So I started to fumble around trying to learn Thai from the beginning. So I had bought a phrase book before I went to the airport, like the day I went to the airport when I was flying to Thailand. And so I was kind of just looking in this, I think it was Lonely Planet phrase book and some like Living Language. They were, you know, they're both pretty terrible. But at the time I didn't know anything about that stuff. So I'm just looking in the book.
English spelling.
Yeah, English spelling. And then I just go up and pretend like I knew what I was doing and try to talk to people and they wouldn't understand. But, I mean, eventually, you know, people that are used to foreigners speaking busted Thai would, and, you know, so I would gradually learn stuff from that.
I want to highlight here that Brett is fluent in Thai. I played his video to my Thai teacher. She said, oh, yeah, I've heard about him. When I mentioned you, and like, can you find me a video where he actually speaks? Because I cannot find it. I'm like, I don't know. You don't know how to Google.
Right.
You know, 2 minutes later, I sent her a video of you.
Which one was it?
It was an old computer in the background.
Oh, yeah, that was probably 2006
and some Thai woman is asking you questions.
Yeah, the girlfriend at the time was interviewing me.
Interviewing you, yes. And then my teacher sends me a message. Like, he's really good.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah. Yeah, so we're talking
that was about 3 years after I got here, probably.
Because you were really submerged. Like, you, like, were in the environment of Thai speaking.
I mean, I did. I kind of didn't like the vibe for most of the foreigners that I met, so I
Is this just, still the case, or...?
I mean, I keep to myself sometimes, but I can only handle so much of co-working spaces and like mega events with like hundreds of foreigners and stuff. I mean, I do go to
crypto pool parties.
Oh, I missed the last one. But it was just like, you know, the older guys would just sit at bars and complain, and then the backpacker type people who were just passing through real quick it was always the same conversation, and it was just didn't feel very fulfilling, and I just felt like I was just saying the same stuff over and over again. So, I mean, yeah, I wasn't an asshole or anything, but I wanted to kind of integrate more with Thai people and kind of figure out how things work. And also, I'm vegan, so, like, I was very motivated in the beginning. Like, how can I make sure that I'm not eating any animals?
At that time, when it wasn't even trendy like it is now.
Oh, yeah, there was none of those things around then. It was, I had to learn about oyster sauce and fish sauce and all that stuff pretty quickly. And then you also have to learn that sometimes people lie. but I did a pretty good job, and I was always scared to eat stuff in the beginning until I kind of got the feel of things.
People lie. Okay, don't talk more about this.
Not always, but I mean, people be like, oh yeah, it's fine, but it's not fine. It's like, that's cooked in oyster sauce, I can't eat that.
Oh, I see.
That kind of stuff.
I guess you're referring to the sort of maybe Southeast Asia as a whole, especially Thailand. People will just nod or say okay.
No problem. Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes they'll be way more verbal than that to give you the impression that, you know, you're going to get everything you ask for, and then they didn't even come close. They didn't get in the first place, or they didn't care, or they forgot. You know, you never really know for sure. It's not usually. I don't think it's malicious. It's just like, when it's being made, they're like, he won't even notice.
Right. Yeah. I think it goes further. You know, like,
it's a cultural thing.
When something is not fixed, repaired, and the landlord is essentially owes it to you to have something fixed, they'll just say, yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah,
you're better off fixing yourself if you're going to be there.
And they don't. They just don't.
You have to ask them many, many times, and then they don't want to pay for it. I mean, not everyone's been like that, but I would say the vast majority of my experiences.
And they will not explain what's really going on through their head. They'll just say, okay, tomorrow. Yes,
right.
Okay, fine. It's my experience, especially when I'm in the Koh Phangan.
Right. So in Thai, there's, when, you know, they have the, if anyone's been to Thailand, like hap and kha, like the kind of gender particles there that are used for politeness. So you can respond with those particles, and it's really just acknowledging that you're listening to the person who's talking.
Kap for man.
Right,
for
girls. But so it's you're really just acknowledging that you're listening. But a lot of times it feels like they're saying yep, okay, yes.
Uh-huh.
But that's not what really necessarily would. I mean, it could mean
it's
that.
More like,
but
mm-hmm.
It's a lot of a lot of Asian languages actually have a requirement, because of the more defined social kind of differences between people, you have to acknowledge people, especially if someone's like a higher status than you. You have to keep acknowledging that you're paying attention to them. This happens a lot in like Korean and Japanese and stuff too. It's kind of interesting, but it can be really annoying when you're first starting to learn a language because you don't understand why.
There's a lot more to
why
learn.
Someone's like every like three words you say.
Oh, it's part of their culture to show that
you gotta show you're paying attention to the big people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you started absorbing that as well. Because I feel like I'm doing this after living in Thailand.
You pick it up on it pretty quick.
You start making more sort of deep sounds that come out when you acknowledge him.
Right.
Okay. You told me you went to school.
All right. So. I guess if we're still talking about the first year, I got a job teaching English. Actually, this is a quick, really good story.
Yeah, okay, I like good stories.
This one restaurant that I was going to a lot, I'd go there and I'd bring my little Thai phrase book and I'd try to write out the letters and stuff, and the server girls would always come over like, oh, what are you learning in Thai? And then they'd say something to me in Thai and I'd understand. But that's also how I learned, because they'd say it to me again every time, and then eventually I would figure out what the hell was they were asking me. And then later I learned how to answer it and eventually how to actually ask it myself. But, you know, this was all part of a process. But I remember one day this girl's like, what are you doing anyway? I'm like, I'm just hanging out studying Thai. And they're like, do you want to like teach English? And I was like, I guess. And they're like, oh, my school needs an English teacher. And she was studying at a university here. Well, it was more of like a college. Mm-hmm. And so I went there the next day. She called whoever works in the office and said, oh, I got this guy going to come in. And I went in there and I printed out like a resume. I had to like figure out how to like print out a resume, right? It's a pretty stressful day to deal with that stuff. I went in and said hi to this girl, and she's like, she handed my resume. And the first question she asked me was, have you ever taught English before? And I was like, nope. And she's like, can you start tomorrow? And that was it. That was my first job.
No led to you hired.
That was the second question. Can you start tomorrow? Yeah. Sure, okay. Yeah. You're hired. That was my first job, and I was teaching business English at a university, basically.
Business English at a university, wow.
With zero knowledge of what was to come. So that was the beginning of...
Did you just wing it? You pulled it off?
Well, they had a book, so I kind of just followed the book, and they had some terrible tapes and stuff. I mean, the beginning, yeah, I just followed what the book was, which wasn't good, but I didn't know what else to do at the time.
But they were content with having an language expert because you're a native speaker.
Well, yeah, they just want a native speaker and you know, a handsome face.
Yeah, let's be honest.
Yeah, so I did that for a little while, and then I started studying Japanese on the weekends just to have something to do at like the YMCA here. And so that was like 6 hours or 4 hours a week, and then so I would teach in the mornings at this university on Saturday, Sunday, and then I'd go to this Japanese class, just trying to fill my day with activities and stuff, so I'm not just drinking all the time. And
but at that time, no formal learning of Thai.
No.
Just restaurants and friends and...
Yeah, I was just doing it by myself, because it wasn't on my radar yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, maybe 6 months in, I don't know if they still have this site, but there's a site called adan.com. Adan means teacher in Thai, and so that was like the site where you would find English teaching
jobs. What's the
word again? Adan.
Adan.
Yeah.
It's not... Crew is...
Crew is another word for teacher. Crew is from guru, that you may know. That's
okay.
The same root.
Okay.
So
the website?
Yeah, so like I think I saw some job, or maybe someone... I can't remember if I applied or if someone just messaged me. I put like my profile in there and ended up getting a job in Pizza Nalok, which is about an hour from Sukhothai. It's about halfway between here and Bangkok.
Mm.
And I ended up teaching like first graders there for one semester. So for about 5 months, I would bus back and forth from that city. I'd come to Chiang Mai for the weekends to do this part-time job and study Japanese and hang out, and then Monday morning I would go back down to the other city and stay there, and then Friday I'd come back, and I did that, and then every 28 days I'd do a visa run to Burma.
28 days at that time.
Yeah. It was awful. Because each way on that bus is 6.5 hours, and the first bus that would leave after, because I teach 3 hours in the morning on Friday and then I get on the bus, and the first bus was a fan bus, and I
as opposed to AC,
so I would, you know, I was the stinky white guy on the bus all the time. because I had my big backpack, and then I'd go back to Chiang Mai and I'd find some place to crash for the weekend and then hang out and do my stuff. It was, I mean, there was good and bad.
Yeah, yeah. But it was some.
But it was the bus ride was took a toll on my you know mental state of mind.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
it was tough. But
still, you were happy with your choice of moving.
I mean, there was no. I mean, there was no going back to the U.S. or anything at that point.
Or anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think I had kind of got my eye on Japan. Like, I kind of like Japan. Sounded kind of interesting. I just wasn't sure if I could afford to like live there.
So at that time, you hadn't been there yet.
Not to now, no. So one thing I discovered moving into this other city is that my Thai was not as good as I thought it was. Because I was used to hanging out with people who spoke nothing, so I was like the translator all the time.
Mm.
Or when someone needs to buy something, or I'd meet people, and they're like, oh, my wife wants to buy souvenirs, can you help? And so I'd go, and I'd be like, I think I know what I'm doing.
You were impressive to the people who didn't speak any Thai.
Right, so yeah. Someone doesn't know anything, they're amazed. But when I moved to another city, I discovered that I had a lot of trouble understanding people, and they didn't understand me a lot of the time. And I was like, what's wrong? First, I was thinking, what's wrong with all these people? But eventually, it occurred to me that maybe I was the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
dialect? Pronunciation?
Well, no, it was my pronunciation.
Your pronunciation, okay.
You know, I was living in Chiang Mai, where people are used to people speaking Thai with, like, totally
variety
incorrect
accents.
Pronunciation. Mm-hmm. You know, they get used to people saying things wrong in a variety of ways, and so they can figure it out. But when you go away from the city, or if you go to a place where there's like, in that time, I only saw like two or three other foreigners in that city, so they weren't. I don't think they were exposed much to bad Thai, really.
Mm-hmm. They were only adjusted sort of exposed to one type of Thai, whatever the local ones, or maybe the TV.
Well,
bank
real Thai,
yeah, real
not like
yeah.
the garbage that a lot of people speak and then claim that they're speaking Thai.
Yeah.
So I would sit in the back of the first graders' class when they were learning their Thai lessons to try to like kind of sneak figure what's going on, and I kind of got more comfortable with the script, but I still didn't get the sound system. There were still things I didn't understand how the tones worked at all. And I, you know, anytime I'd ask the Thai teachers that I worked with questions, the answer was always like, you know, they couldn't answer, they couldn't explain anything. I mean, they couldn't explain it in English for sure. So there was a lot of guesswork that I was doing.
Mm.
And then towards the end of that first year, I went back to Chiang Mai and I ended up enrolling in university here. And I just figured I would do that to get a visa to be here so I could stop the visa runs. And so I'd have a schedule. I figured I'd do it part-time or whatever and meet some people.
Yeah.
And so I went to university, and pretty early on in that first semester is when I kind of sat down and learned how to learn the sound system of Thai like properly. And it took me maybe about 6 weeks. Once I found a resource that explained everything, I found this really old book from the 50s that was written by, I think, some British diplomat or something.
Mm-hmm.
who the book was basically teaching other
like
diplomats
tables,
how to talk to their help.
Yes.
it was kind of like that. But it also broke apart the language into pieces and kind of explained the sound system and how the tones worked and all these things that I never knew anything about previously. Uh-huh. And then I just sat and I studied it, you know, anytime I had free time for about 6 weeks until it clicked. And once it clicked, it was like the door swung open. I realized all these sounds that I'd been mixing up were totally different, and I understood why, and I realized what things I'd been saying wrong, and I was able to self-correct everything very quickly. And then it was easy to progress at that point.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's all after reading that book.
Well, it wasn't just reading it. Like, I had to really...
Put it to practice.
I had to learn that stuff and then practice it every day for a long time before I really mastered it. And once it became automatic, it was easy.
So for people who are thinking about it, about learning language Thai or something from
right.
from the group, or they started and feel like it's
hard,
definitely alien and hard, you know, like what's the progression? What should people should expect to happen if they keep at it?
I think what most people try to do is try to learn some basic phrases and stuff in the beginning.
And use them.
And okay, if you're going there immediately, and it's not terrible, but you're going to be saying everything really wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times you have no grasp on some of the weird vowels and or like sounds between like ka and ga and pa and ba, and they have all these sounds in Thai and a lot of other tonal languages that don't exist in English, or they're not differentiated between.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for people to know that there's only like in Thai vowels, every word has one particular vowel sound, and it's not, you can't change it. Whereas in English, you can go all around the world and meet different people speaking English, saying the same word with a different vowel pronunciation, and we all understand each other. Mm-hmm. But Thai doesn't work like this at all. There's a lot more vowels, but each one is only one sound. So that means it's intimidating in the beginning, but so once
there
you
are
learn,
no duplicate vowels.
Well, there's no variation in the vowels. Uh-huh. So if, like, coffee in Thai is cafe, and it's like an ah vowel and an eh, whereas a lot of other languages have more like cafe or coffee.
Within the States. You know, there's
there's variation there. But in Thai, there's not. You go anywhere in Thailand, and they're going to say cafe. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So if you're not saying cafe, you're saying it wrong. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's only
if you're shortening part of it or something, or you say coffee, or
For the most part, the 60 whatever million people in Thailand are going to be using the same vowel sound. Mm-hmm. So if you're not saying that vowel sound, it's really hard to understand. And then if on top of that you're ignoring the fact that it's a tonal language, like it becomes very hard. I mean, even I have trouble understanding when people.
So in the beginning, when you were actually already learning and. On the streets and using it, you had zero idea. No one mentioned any tones to you as a concept.
No, I knew it was a tonal language, but I didn't really understand how that was determined. Like I didn't know how to know why a word was a particular tone. And then I realized there's tone marks, and I thought that was kind of telling you everything you needed to know. But it's more complicated than that.
I see. Uh-huh. And then so. At the university, you had a degree you were working on.
Well. I did one full semester, and then I was like, this is kind of silly. So I would take like the minimum amount of classes I could take to be enrolled, which was three. And then I would kind of work it. So I would only choose classes based on what I wanted to study. Uh-huh. And, you know, I would make sure I was only going to the university 2 days a week because it was kind of far from the city where I was living. And so that would give me the visa. It gave me three classes to study 2 days a week. So I had some homework, and I was like, and now it's like I have a fake schedule. I meet people. And yeah, it worked out pretty well. It took, you know.
Did you get a degree of some sort?
I did get a degree in English.
In English,
in Chiang Mai.
In English.
So,
in
and
Chiang
my English has probably improved dramatically since then.
Hopefully.
No, I mean, I didn't. When I went there, I didn't really want to major. I didn't care about degrees or any of that stuff. I just wanted to take some classes mainly in languages. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, like, learn Chinese and Japanese and anything that they had, basically.
Okay. So that led you to becoming. A proficient speaker of Thai and then a teacher.
Well, I mean, it made it easier for me to stay here, for one thing. And I met people. I met people that were studying, university, and some of them were really smart, and I could ask them questions that you can't ask the bar staff sometimes because they don't know how to tell you this. So it did help me kind of progress in terms of my Thai. You know, in the beginning, also, like, moving in with these people who speak English really well, I was at this point where maybe my Thai's not as good as I thought it was. That seemed to be, like, a reoccurring theme.
Mm-hmm. Were you making a living somehow? Like,
I still had some savings, and I still taught English on the side. You never made much money back then. You get, like, 300 baht an hour for a lot of jobs. Like, and then as my Thai got better, I started taking translation gigs. So, and then those never paid very well either, usually. I'd sign up with a lot of the translation sites online as that became more of a thing. And my Japanese got kind of better, so I was doing Japanese translation too sometimes.
And, so what languages do you speak now?
I kind of speak Japanese, Chinese, and Korean. And Thai is more fluent than all them. And then I've been kind of messing around with Vietnamese the past year, but I'm not, like, great. I'm not great at any of them anymore. But I can kind of speak.
They help
still.
Each other, like learning them help, like one language supports another in some way, or.
I mean, I think if you understand the sound system of one language, you can kind of appreciate how important it is in another language. So that helps, and having some sort of plan to how to go about getting better at any skill, but especially language. Having done it before, it's certainly easier to do it again. Mm-hmm. It's not, if the languages are related, that may give you a lot of free words and stuff like that. Like.
Yeah,
so
some borrowed words between languages.
It doesn't mean like learning Thai and Chinese are pretty different languages, but they're both tonal, so it's not a huge jump. And Vietnamese, like a lot of the vowel sounds are, I can see how they're maybe distantly related to Thai in some ways. Like they have some of those like two vowels connected together, like and stuff like that. And Vietnamese sort of has a slight variation on them.
So you've lived in. Chiang Mai nonstop for a few years.
Well, I did about 6 months where I was, in that other city.
Oh yeah, but then you came back.
But
to Chiang Mai.
Yeah, I would always come back to Chiang Mai.
And then so that was like what, 10 years or something.
Yeah. Well, I graduated 2009. Uh-huh. 2005, I was an exchange student from my Thai university to Australia.
Oh wow! So you were a Thai student in Australia.
I was the white guy from Thailand. That's what everyone called me, because it's kind of true. It's kind of weird to be like an exchange student from Thailand.
But everyone knew that your backstory, like you came from Thailand.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, because everyone always asks when you're an exchange student, like, oh, where you come from, like Thailand.
Interesting.
So it was fun. I spent 6 months in Melbourne.
So eventually, you stopped being a permanent resident of Chiang Mai.
I graduated, you know, the visa dies and. I went on like a fake language school visa for a little while. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a normal thing. So I was at the time I was actually just teaching online. I guess I don't know if I was teaching online yet, but I was teaching people in person of Thai at this point. Maybe about 2006-ish. Maybe I started teaching Thai to some friends, and then that kind of exploded after over a couple of years, where I started making more money from that than teaching English. And so I scaled back on the English teaching and translation jobs. I would only take like bigger ones.
I would think that people would prefer to learn a language from a native speaker oftentimes. Like, yeah. What are the benefits of learning from a non-native speaker like yourself?
Well, they're going to definitely need a native speaker very soon. But the advantages of having someone that is a native speaker of your language is that I can explain all the things that native speakers can't. I know how to explain how to pronounce a sound that you've never said before or you don't know how to make, whereas nobody can do that in their own language most of the time because you don't know what's happening inside your mouth.
Yeah.
But I had to learn how to do it to say it correctly so I can explain it to someone. So things like that,
yes.
I can save them enormous amounts of time.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, of course, they're going to still need to practice with native speakers.
As an added bonus, probably you can explain cultural stuff.
Right.
Which I think is very important in Thailand.
It's huge.
So mastering a language opens a lot of doors, and so you become more integrated in society. But
even just learning how to say a few things correctly, and not just translating from English, like learning a few words and translating from English. Whereas in Thai culture, if you're on some sort of acquaintance level with someone, like you don't say like the standard like "sawadee khrap." I mean, you can, but it's a little bit stiff and formal. You're more likely to ask them where they're going, where they're coming from, or if they've eaten yet. Mm-hmm. That's like a standard greeting.
If they have eaten rice specifically.
Well, I mean, it just means.
Yeah.
I mean, they use rice interchangeable for food, so they're really just they're saying, "Have you eaten yet?"
Yeah, kind of like bread in the English language, breadwinner, you know.
Right. Or it's, you know, the staple. Bacon. But I mean, you don't have to be like, "Well, I had noodles." Like, it's okay. You don't like when someone asks you if you've eaten, you just say, "I have" or "I haven't," or you can even ignore it. Really, in a lot of cases, because it really doesn't mean they don't really care if you've eaten or not. I mean, they care. They're showing concern that you have. But it's more about, hey, how's it going?
Uh-huh.
And yes, you know, you can just say I ate already and keep going, or you can stop and talk to them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your security guards, if there's a salon below your building and they say hi to you all the time, that kind of stuff. They're just gonna. That's kind of how they say, well, how are you doing?
In my experience, since I'm kind of actively learning Thai, they like over time I noticed the difference. Like at 7-Eleven or. The service place, whatever, a restaurant, they will support me with my Thai effort. And I think for two different reasons. Sometimes they just don't speak English, so they're happy that I can actually carry on with Thai and they don't have to stress themselves out with their incorrect English. And sometimes it's because they appreciate my effort, they want to support me, and they don't switch to English from me just so that they can see how far I can go, because it's fun for them.
Right.
Yeah. But other times, they insist on switching to English because they don't believe me. They think I just memorize things.
I'd say for the most part, Thai people are very supportive of this. But they're also, they'll shower you with praise before you have... As soon as you open your mouth, they're going to tell you how great. They're like, wow! Which is great in the beginning, but people tend to get a big head from that because everyone's telling them how. I mean, I went through this, and every one of my students over the years was like, "I don't understand. Everyone tells me I'm great." I'm like, "Yeah, but
are you really great? Yeah,
you're not.
Yeah,
you're still saying a lot of things wrong, and like, there's a lot of room for improvement. But they're not going to tell you.
Yeah, so with your level of mastery, you become integrated in society where you can even like starting from the immigration checkpoint, you can have a little chit chat, crack a couple jokes already. Like boom, you like, this is my home, this is my country.
Yeah.
And everywhere you go, people are they don't know you are amazed that you can actually have a conversation with them, and they like really enjoy it, and you enjoy it. It's a lot of good vibes, a lot of good positive things come out of it.
A lot of fun adventures have come from it.
Yeah, but. Have you found any
negative
walls like in that integration?
Oh yeah, definitely. Mm. I mean, there's been many relationships, not just like girls, but like just friendships over the years that the interactions in certain situations were very different than I was used to, and like friends from like back in the States and stuff like that. In terms of like,
you should have worked in
how
theory.
Reliable people are about certain things, and I mean, there's different cultural expectations, and I feel like in Thailand you have this sort of, there's a lot of circles of friendship that I guess exists on some level everywhere, where you have like your work friends and you have your university friends and stuff, and you know, whenever I would come into these groups, I often felt like I was maybe an outer circle to these people. Like I was never really one of them, but they were very accepting of me.
Mm, so there's several circles, like layers of skin, like
right.
An onion.
So you got like a little bit deeper. I felt like I could never get all the way in.
Simply because.
I mean, not to say that I haven't had good friends over the years. It's just I felt like in a lot of situations, that's kind of what happened. It's like they became like friends, but nah, I never felt like I was part of these inner circles.
I think it's a common theme that I keep hearing about difficulties to maintain meaningful friendships with the locals in Thailand. I don't know about other places, but specifically I hear about Thailand that not many people have. Actually, as a matter of fact, a lot of people have acquaintances or friends that are female much easier than males, was what I heard.
I mean, it depends on what they're doing. I mean, yeah, I mean, I would say that it's a lot easier to meet female friends. But there, you can make friends with guys, too. You just have to go with, you have to be doing things that they're going to do. It really depends on how, I mean, I guess I had, there was guys that I worked with, or people I went to school with. So, I mean, I made friends that were Thai that way.
And you
but like
to,
if you're just going to bars or you're going out and trying to talk to girls all the time, you're going to meet a lot of girls.
Yeah, but I think what they meant was like coffee shops and business owners that are female. There were a lot more sort of like maintaining that warm relationship, like willing to keep it going.
All right,
something like that. But maybe subjective.
Yeah, I guess it depends. I mean. Maybe it's easier on some level for that. I'm not really sure.
And choosing Thailand as a permanent place to live comes with a bit of a stigma outside, right? So if people like evaluate your life decisions, they think, Thailand, I understand. Yeah. you're just this kind of guy.
I think there's still people in America who think like we're living in a jungle or something. Whereas like the malls here,
everywhere.
Here are like 50 times better than everything in the States. And like, the States almost feels like the Stone Age outside of, a few major cities compared to what you see in like Bangkok or something.
That's true.
Like you can watch a movie in America compared to like watching a movie in Thailand. Thailand's, five times as comfortable and, maybe a quarter of the price.
Yeah, and the myth keeps on going about how awesome life is in the States based on Hollywood movies. I mean, people in Thailand eat this stuff up. They want to copy it. They want to have the same thing.
And then they go there and then they have to work at a restaurant for like 12 hours
South
a day
Carolina.
For like no money. Yeah. Whoops.
or Arkansas or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a Thai restaurant everywhere.
Yeah, it's not what they thought.
No. So... Your website, so the teaching gig became sort of a stepping stone to an online business. Now you have courses.
Right. Yeah, I sell a bunch of online courses for teaching people to go from like zero to, I can kind of speak Thai and I can pronounce diff pretty well.
I just put in my email and did the first introductory.
The free lesson?
The free lesson, okay. Yeah, where you offer to memorize English words that are, my guess was that they are translations of what that word is in Thai.
They're the names of the letters translated into English. So the idea is to let you sort of learn or recognize a few letters in Thai by connecting it to an English keyword, which later you'll just be able to train. You know, when you learn the Thai word, you can just switch over.
With the easiest letter being Goga, was it?
Gokai.
Gokai, yeah. Where it actually looks,
it looks like
a head of a bird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, for me, it's the easiest letter.
Right.
Because when I see it, I know it.
Yeah. No doubt. Gai is chicken. So it's just, okay, you know, like, they use the sound of the letter plus an A vowel. So ga, gai, and then whatever the word is that is used as the name of the letter.
Every letter has a kind of a nickname.
Well, it's referred to that way. So it's almost, it's similar to the radio alphabet. Like Alpha, Beta, Charlie, like the military,
customer service,
like the military, like when they do that.
Iphone,
so it's kind of like that. Mm-hmm. So, but imagine English was like ball, bird, call, cat, dog, dog. Imagine like referring to letters that way. That's basically what's happening in Thai.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So it's a good introduction. And you make the connection with the English language.
Right, because you're not going to be able to say these sounds if the first time you hear them. You're going to say them wrong. You're not going to understand what's happening. But so right now in the first lesson, it's just like being able to identify, okay, this one's a chicken, this one's a turtle, this one's the fish.
This one's basin, this one
so
is
you can,
basket.
So you can already distinguish between them, even though you can't say them yet. And it just takes 2 or 3 minutes to go through that little lesson to kind of get the idea. And then the next thing, you slowly got introduced to the sounds. But you can start putting things together and adding vowels in before you can say it perfectly. So I've just kind of structured it in a way so that people don't get overwhelmed, because there's a lot of weird sounds, and it's people get really frustrated. When I taught over the years, I would say probably 8 out of 10 people would have some sort of meltdown learning the sounds, because they would get really stressed out that they weren't getting something. And it was never over the same thing. It was just they didn't understand that there's a difference between an ah and an ah and an ah, and that they had to separate those in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the easiest way, I believe, to do that is to just learn the script instead of trying to write an A and remember which of those sounds it is.
Yeah, so my Thai teacher gives me what's called IPA, which is a standard of writing with English letters. Some of them are...
They're kind of modified.
Invented, which really helps me. I can at least... We have this common sort of medium. I can do my homework using that and then can read from it, you know. But I noticed with her, sometimes she struggles to explain little things and I have to go deeper, Google things myself, such as, maybe that's too nerdy for some people, but I think it's fascinating that to say I, first person I, in Thai language, there are many, many different ways, depending on your social...
I'll give you some advice here. You don't have to say I 90% of the time.
Uh-huh. Like in Spanish, kind of. Yeah, you can admit
it. If you say I don't like something, you just say don't like.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You don't have to say I, because... Yes, like there's a lot of pronouns, and then again, like status and age, all these factors into like what pronoun you're supposed to be using, and you're probably going to be wrong. So just you can just drop them in any kind of reasonably informal conversation. You don't need to say I, unless you have to specify. In which case, you can just use your name to refer to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That fascinates me.
So I could say like Brett, my cha something like mm-hmm. I Brett,
it will not
which,
sound
which
weird.
Means it doesn't sound weird at all. Which is me saying I don't like. Whatever.
Brett doesn't like.
Yeah.
Which sounds like you, a mentally ill person in English.
It sounds weird in English. Well, it sounds a little bit conceited in English. Brett doesn't do this.
Yeah.
Brett doesn't like the pizza or whatever.
This person, yeah. Or like in Jamaican, they like to say I and I. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so okay. Like two eyes. I guess one is the god, Jah, right. And the other one is myself.
I
and I.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So where are you headed? What's happening
in life?
In life, yeah.
I've just been working a lot on growing the business lately, and waiting patiently for Bitcoin to recover.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a year ago
that kept me busy for a while. I got very distracted by cryptocurrency for over a year, and it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, a year ago here it was all about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I was flying all over the world, going to conferences. I went on the
crypto
cruise.
Ah, and it all seemed like you know, adequate stuff to do at the time. You didn't feel like you were part of something slightly cultish and weird.
No, of course. Mm. And then, you know, you'd go to these conferences and you meet a lot of charlatans. But I thought I got pretty good at telling being able to tell the difference between people that were like really believing and working on something cool and the people who were just there trying to like hype up their shit coin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, apparently I was wrong a couple times.
When you were completely convinced that you
were
good.
Well, hearing some people talk sometimes, like, what? Like, they just, these people seemed very smart and with the sort of vision that they're painting and what they were trying to build. But, I mean, what eventually happened is, you know, for all the projects that didn't sell off enough money, they don't have any money anymore now. So it's like you can't afford to hire all, you know, to keep paying all these teams that you've hired to build this cool idea of yours. So what happens? It's like they die. The project dies off because they don't have any funds anymore.
This ICO doesn't mean anything, you know, whatever they raised.
Yeah. It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah. No, it
and I still believe in like blockchain technology. I think it's gonna do some cool stuff, but there's no way to be sure what's gonna happen in terms of the prices of everything.
And you think Thailand became very prominent in that because of the expats, because of the travelers?
Yes.
Or somehow.
Because there's a lot of nomads and stuff that were interested in that scene, right? So
not because Thailand is itself like a government or the entrepreneurs of Thailand are into it. No.
I mean, not to say that doesn't exist. There is an entrepreneurial kind of culture in Thailand. Like the government is reasonably good about that stuff. Like there are events, you know, some of these co-working spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I did a startup competition a bunch of years ago here, the Global Startup Challenge. That was
like a weekend.
Yeah, like a weekend thing in Chiang Mai. Mm-hmm. Like that was fun.
Yeah. So, anything you miss about the West or the States that you cannot get here?
I mean, I go back to the U.S. like twice a year. And
what did you notice that you think to yourself, "Ah, I wish we had this in Thailand."
No.
Nothing at all.
I mean, there's some really nice, really beautiful, you know, like, parks and stuff in the U.S. But no, I miss some friends and stuff, but I go see them a couple of times a year, so that's it. I don't, there's nothing that I miss from my life that I can't get in Asia.
So you think this notion that you should be patriotic or you should support your, you know, homeland or whatever, no matter what, or whatever you chose to be, it's really flimsy right now. Like it's necessary to keep the sort of the states together, the governments, the countries together. But if everyone thought, "Oh, I don't have any attachment to any particular location. You know, if I like it there, I go there." It's kind of like this already inside the states. People move from state to state all the time.
It's not easy, though. Because if you change states, there's all these things you have to do. You eventually have to get a new driver's license. You know, there's all these little steps you have to take. And then, like, taxes and... You can just move. But there's a bunch of stuff you'll eventually have to deal with.
Yeah.
Whereas, I don't have to deal with anything of that in my life. And I move around at will, and I may set up somewhere for a month, or I may hang out for a week, I may just go on a short trip, and I just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
I live out of hotels and Airbnbs usually. It's pretty rare that I'll rent a place for a month, but once in a while.
Right now, what are you...
I got an Airbnb for a month here this time, and then right before here I was in Vietnam for a couple of weeks, and I stayed in a hotel for a few days, and then I got an Airbnb for like 10 days or something.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like in the States there's always this nagging feeling that you're maybe behind on something, like maybe like you need to pay some bills or...
That's because you usually are.
Yeah, because you are.
The vast majority, you know, the people in the U.S., I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm sure it's most, you know, they're in debt.
Mm-hmm.
People live well above their means. And, you know, there's always this feeling like you gotta get a better car and a new couch and a bigger house, and I've just never had interested in any of that. I want to see more stuff. I want to learn more stuff. I want to know how people think about things in other places, because it's different than the way I thought about things my whole life.
Yeah. I left New York. I sold everything. I put stuff in the storage there. So, and I came back like a year later. I downsized that storage even further. So I threw away the bed and all this kind of stuff. So,
right.
So now I have just enough to keep my most important thing, like boxes of documents and some stuff. A friend of mine, sort of life circumstances for him were that he had to double down and invest into his life in New York. So he got a bigger apartment.
Right.
And when we're talking, it's like it's like, well, I don't want to be minimalist and live like a traveler in my permanent place. Mm. So might as well, you know, get a duplex apartment and, okay. you know, that. And I'm thinking, like, I think I used to be able to understand this worldview a lot better. And now I understand it and I respect the choices that people make, but it's completely not for me. Like, right. people ask me, like, well, you just have the backpack and that's it? I'm like, yeah, I mean, what else do you need?
I've been living like that for years now, and it can be tiring sometimes, but it's great. I've seen so much amazing things. I've been to so many places.
What do you crave when you get a place for a month? Is your Airbnb like, doesn't need to have a big TV so you can connect to like your computer and watch a movie on the bigger screen?
No. I mean, I never watch TV unless I have company. Mm. I don't even turn it on. I don't need a TV. If I watch something, it's on my computer, my phone.
Well, you can connect to a bigger TV.
I could, but I never have the cables and stuff. Yeah. Because I'm very minimalist. I don't want to carry anything that I don't need all the time.
Yeah.
So I mean, literally, I have, generally at a time, I have 6 T-shirts and, like, basically 6 days of clothes. That's it. That's all I travel with. And I have, like, an exercise band, laptop, Nintendo Switch, and my phone. That's it. I don't need anything else. One pair of pants. I have jackets stashed around the world if I go somewhere cold. And that's it. If something starts getting worn out, I just bought a new bag. It was very stressful.
Cause to choose that one bag.
Because it has to be perfect. It's like, I got to make sure it's not going to cause me pain because the thing will be on my back a lot.
Yeah.
And it's got to hold my life, which isn't that much, but it still needs to be big enough, but not too big, because also it becomes like my day bag carrying around a computer. And I'm pretty happy with it.
Mm-hmm. So this is the main bag.
There was a lot of searching to find that bag.
Yeah, we're looking at a medium-sized backpack here.
Yeah.
That's the main bag.
Yeah, I don't even think it's... It might be 25 liters, it might be less. It's pretty small.
I'm not that...
I wanted to get smaller than my last bag because, you know, it forces you to make decisions about, like, I don't need 8 T-shirts because I could just do laundry once every 6 or 7 days, and that's it. And I don't need to carry the extra stuff. I can always buy another shirt for nothing when I need it.
Mm.
So...
I guess we can get to the closing part, and maybe any advice, any parting words to the people who might be like kind of feeling like they may want it, but they're not quite sure if they should take off and go somewhere. Nike, just do it.
Absolutely. It's the greatest decision I ever made was to leave the U.S. and.
I think it would be the same with other countries.
It depends on that.
I left Russia at some point.
I think probably everywhere in the world has some value to someone, and you may not like every place you go, but if you approach it like, if you go somewhere and you don't feel comfortable, go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the whole world's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to find something that you're going to love, and you may later figure out that some place you didn't like before, you know, it was because your perspective hadn't opened up yet.
You won't know it.
And, you know, because there is culture shock is a real thing. And, like, you know, I went to lunch with a couple of Thai people yesterday, and one girl has never left the country. And we went to, like, one of these vegan kind of foreigner places. And she was eating something which was okay. And she was, like, she looked like she was going to throw up not because it was bad. It was just so weird for her.
Mm.
It's like, this is not what I'm used to eating. And, you know, Americans, a lot of people, I know people in the States and other countries that are just the same. Like, they just want the same stuff that they've had their whole life.
Yeah.
And they're not being open-minded. It's okay for something to be weird and uncomfortable at first. You get used to these things, and you may come to love them eventually. But if you don't try, you're missing out. If you don't go look, if you don't go places, you don't know anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of joy hidden in those parts of life where you don't dare to go.
Right. It's not just the things you see and the things you experience. It's also what you learn about other people and what it means to speak another language and culture and how it affects the way you think about everything. Time and food and relationships, it's different. People, not everyone in the world thinks exactly the same way you do.
It ties nicely to learning a language, right? And I think
it's very connected.
It will be fair to say that everyone should make a little bit of an effort to learn a language if they stay somewhere, even for a short time. Right. Just be curious.
I go for a week and I try to learn some stuff because it changes your interactions with everyone, all the other locals. Even if you just say one phrase, they'll, you know, every country people smile. Almost every country. There's probably an exception or two.
There's an added bonus of feeling a dopamine spike in your brain. Yeah,
I'm understood. It motivates you to keep going, and you have a good time. And it endears you to people when you go talk to them. Instead of just shouting at them in English.
Excellent. Thank you for sitting down with me.
Sure.
Learn Thai from a white guy.com.
Yep.
Let the journey go on.